Let the dentist take a sample of any suspicious-looking oral lesion. Then a computer analyzes the tissue for abnormal cells and informs the dentist. Early detection can make all the difference. Those most vulnerable to oral cancer are people past 40. Your risk rises sharply if you smoke cigarettes, cigars, or a pipe, or chew tobacco, especially when you combine nicotine use with heavy alcohol intake. So when brushing and flossing, be sure to check your mouth for red or white patches. If you have a mouth sore that won't heal or a lump anywhere in your mouth, see your dentist. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez-Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org.
All right, get off the air already. Thank you. As long as we're nagging you about things, pick up after yourself, for God's sake, and do your laundry. It's been piling up. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook time for Off the Wall. And we're here. Another Tuesday night here at the Mighty USB, and another edition of Off the Wall is on the air. This is Emmanuel, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello, E.
And Kyle, I just want to say, well done. Well done.
Just in general.
Yeah, you don't know specifically what I'm talking about, but yes, well done, because you've done so many things, none of which I'm going to talk about, but I just want to say, yeah, you're doing good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I appreciate and accept the acknowledgement.
And folks, that's important to do. The person next to you, if they've accomplished anything of worth in the last week or so, turn to them and say, well done. It'll make a difference. It really will.
Well done, E.
Thank you. Although I can't help but think that that was sort of provoked, you know? You wouldn't have said that if I hadn't given that speech.
Well, we can analyze that later.
I said it first.
Okay, fine.
And that's important too, folks.
This is mysterious.
What's mysterious?
I did stuff, okay.
Yeah, you did lots of stuff. Lots of stuff. Kyle does stuff.
Yeah, I do.
In case, you should have a bumper sticker that you wear that says that, because that's what you tackle projects. And, you know, I know a lot of people do, and you inspire people to tackle more projects. But things that other people would not tackle, and things that might seem like they're impossible, even.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, I guess, in this, like, hyper-social era is a lot of the stuff I do, I don't really talk about or share or, you know, have a bazillion, like, likes and, you know, retweets and stuff. I mean, I think...
You're not much of a tweeter.
No. But, anyway, that is really distracting.
I'm sorry. That's
yeah. You're messing with my audio.
I know. I'm trying to figure out that the theme just suddenly ended too. Yeah. But I have to check things. You know, I'm running a radio station here too.
So anyway, I think that's. I totally lost my train of thought. I'm completely distracted. What are we doing here?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to get through the hour. But you know what, folks? We're going to take phone calls this hour. We're going to do that. We haven't done that in a long time. So let me give out the phone number now. Don't call now. Don't call. For God's sake, look at that. Full. Completely full. Seven calls all coming in. No, hang up. Not taking phone calls now. It's just going to time out. You'll be disappointed. 631-632-9872. Obviously, you know the phone number, but those people who don't know the phone number, 631-632-9872. There, they all hung up. And I have a feeling they're not going to call back. Because they're angry now. Well, you know, we have things to talk about, things to clear up. First of all, update on last week's show. We were talking about the gutting of the humanities department here and the merging of other departments and the overall ignorance of anything non-scientific and engineering and computer science here. And you know, we just wanted to give the update on that it was, there was no update apparently, because I've been looking all over the place for updates. They were supposed to decide this last week, and apparently it's been tabled. So the pressure still needs to be applied to save departments that might not be, you know, the number one varsity type departments that people put in the headlines,
or let's put it this way: it might be something that you don't know you're good at.
Uh huh. Uh-huh.
And if it's taken away, you'll never know that.
Exactly. Exactly. And people who would be drawn here normally won't come here. And having even one person not come here means many other people will be affected by their non-presence, their non-influence. That's something to consider. You know, somebody who comes here and majors in Hispanic studies or Russian language or all kinds of amazing things that we have here at this campus, that's a loss for all of us, those in the engineering department, those in computer science. You know, we're not all automatrons. We're not all the same.
Homogeneity.
Yeah, it's diversity. That is the strength of this place. I have to say, you know, coming here as a college student is what turned me on to diversity. And as you can see, that's affected me throughout the rest of my life. And I dare say other people were influenced by that as well. So it's important to preserve these things. And if you want to apply the pressure, Provost Michael Bernstein, 631-632-7000, leave your opinions there.
What does he drive?
Dean of... Was he drive?
I'm just kidding.
Dean of CAS, Sasha Kopp, 631-632-6999. They're consecutive numbers. Be polite, be nice, and share your experiences, your opinions. You know, we're talking about a budget shortfall of, you know, not that much that I think can be, you know,
remedied.
It can be remedied rather easily. Some of us have it on us. You know, it's not a huge amount. But let's preserve Stony Brook University as the awesome place that it is, through its diversity, through the many different departments that we have here that are strong, that are prosperous. And, you know, it might not be reflected in the numbers, but it is reflected in the quality.
What is the number again, the budget shortfall?
You know, you're putting me on the spot. I think it's like just over $1 million or something, or $1.8 million.
So is that like...
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is.
That's like...
It's not much. It's pocket
change. Like less than 5 Maseratis.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, I'm sure there's some of those laying around.
You know, I don't want to get into athletics, but, you know, if the athletics director gets paid a huge amount of money, that approaches that figure. I'm just saying. I'm not saying fire the guy or woman. I don't know who it is.
Can you imagine a campus that was just all football?
You know, go down south, you will find that. Go to Clemson University. Man, it is all football. They have an 80,000-seat stadium in the middle of the damn campus.
And all the classes are just, like, for show. It's like a facade, like an old Western.
It is. If you go down there and you watch the football team practice, you will be arrested. Because it's equivalent to spying.
Wow.
Yeah, they take it seriously down there. And I'm not saying Clemson doesn't have classes and departments too.
Or class.
But it's overshadowed, and I just, you know, I don't understand. How did this happen in the first place? How did football? Who was the wise guy who said, you know what? Let's start a football team at the university, and we'll stay out of the way, you know, of you English majors and everything. And then all of a sudden, it just kept getting bigger and bigger until they were the dominant force.
Yeah, and that is so funny in retrospect, considering the amount of attention that chronic, what is it, mashing your brain against the other brains and, you know, how you...
Oh, smashing your head into other heads, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we just found out that's not good for you.
Who knew that? Wow.
I know, it's
who
amazing.
Who knew healthcare was complicated, and who knew that bashing your head against another head would result in damage to both heads?
And how is this something college campuses throw the... Just dump money into.
Okay, but we did figure it out first. They figured out on a college campus that hitting heads, you know, against other heads hard is bad.
Really? And I wonder how many geniuses that took.
Well, education. It just goes to show, the more you know. But, you know, I already built the stadium, so you got to keep hitting heads against each other. That's just the way it is.
Uh-huh.
But let me just read a couple of comments from people that have signed petitions against this. Failing to work with faculty disregards the long tradition of shared governance that is a cornerstone, an important measure of university excellence in European and U.S. history. No sufficient rationale has been put forward for this extreme change in Stony Brook's culture. Here's someone else. I am a Stony Brook alumni. I'm appalled to hear of these cuts to valuable and successful programs on campus. There are other ways to approach budget shortfalls. Furthermore, affected faculty and students should have been brought into the process and allowed to participate in the decisions.
Duh.
This makes no sense. Why wouldn't you get rid of your failing programs, ones that do not draw in students or success? I'm not sure what side that person is on. But if you're referring to departments that aren't huge departments as failing, that's a Trumpish thing to say. And it's not true. You know, you can't measure it that way.
But whole departments. I mean, maybe be selective with classes. Like, if basket weaving isn't filling up.
Hey, basket weaving is important. No, they don't actually do that here.
Or macrame,
although,
doilies.
You know, no, that you just brought me to another point. The craft center in the union was an amazing place where I think you could weave baskets.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, the union building where we used to be is currently being nuked. I mean, not like with a full-fledged nuke, but like tactical nukes.
Proverbially.
They're just destroying, well, not destroying, they're doing something to it. And once they purge it of its demons, they're rebuilding
it. Are they going to build on top of it?
I don't know what they're doing
it?
Exactly.
Are they gutting it?
They're doing everything to it. They're trying all different things. But in the end, it's prophecy that it will rise again out of the ashes, and it will be bigger and mightier than ever. But the previously mentioned craft center is not invited back. For some reason, all this expansion on campus... And you take the thing that, you know, was encouraging people to be creative and artistic, and you're saying, no, there's no room for you. How is that even possible? How is there no room for them if you're building the building again? Who's taking over that space? You know, Kraft Center was a great place, and I really hope somebody reconsiders that as well, as long as we're talking about reconsidering things here on campus.
Maybe
a Kraft Center is an amazing place. You know what? So is a bar. I'm sorry. I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but university used to have bars in every single dormitory. I know the drinking age used to be 10, but once it got, you know, raised to 21, they couldn't do that. But they had one bar on campus called University Cafe, not the best name, but it was okay. It was in the union. It had concerts. We sponsored many of the concerts ourselves. And that's not opening either. And that's, you know, you need hangouts. You need places for people to go. And there are people over 21 here and places, music venues and things like that. Otherwise, students are drawn off campus where it's dangerous and, you know, they have to drive and figure out how to get places.
That just occurred to me. Like, if you create a venue where there is a formal bar, you're actually regulating the amount of drinking because socially people are attracted to it, but you control distribution. Therefore, bartenders can deny people a drink, right? Like at a normal bar.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not allowing that on campus because you want to discourage it, like you said, students will just go elsewhere where, you know, it's somebody just buying tons of booze and it's not controlled in any way.
Yeah, they'll go, like, across the train tracks and across Route 25A to some place where they, you know, it's dangerous to do that as well. You might get hit by a car, you might get hit by a train, you know, you might get hit by an angry person in a parking lot. Who knows? When you're on campus, there's like, a community. You know, I remember there used to be and this won't mean anything to people who haven't gone here, but we have dormitories have certain names, like Benedict. It used to be the Benedict Saloon. James was another another dormitory, still is, the James Pub. There was the Morrison Hotel. That was another. Every single dormitory seemed to have its own business that was a bar and a snack shop and things like that. And these days, they just don't do that anymore. Even with the loss of alcohol, you still could run various businesses. And it's, you know, you learned a lot through doing that. So.
You know, this reminds me, when I was in college, we had, I think, a Tuesday or a Thursday,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was hosted by the Natural Science Department, but basically you just go to, like, the bar across the street from campus and drink with your professors and students, and
yeah.
everybody would be at the bar.
You know, I hear stories to this day of professors that invite their students to their homes where they do just that. And it's really cool. You have all kinds of interesting discussions,
yeah.
Particularly philosophy departments, and that's one of the departments being proposed for cuts.
And you get interdisciplinary mingling,
mm-hmm.
and you get to know the professors and the grad, you know, assistants and stuff. And it's a really cool way to mesh.
It's vital that that we're open to this type of thing. We don't just listen to the bottom line and the bureaucrats and the people who don't really get as involved in the academic part of it all, because there is magic there. There is such magic that just can't be created on paper. It happens socially. Let me just read a couple more of these comments, and we'll move on.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that arts are the answer. This proposal is a surrender to ignorance. Eliminating art and culture is incredibly short-sighted. We need to support creative minds and enhance our diversity and find solutions now more than ever. Seems like the dean is gunning for the cowardly option here. Oh, that's a shot at the dean there. Hopefully,
that's not mincing words. Right?
No, that's not mincing words at all.
What are you going to say, dean?
Our son graduated from Stony Brook, and if the departments merge, we will no longer support a university that is being overmanaged by administrators who are unaware of what a great university requires. All right, that's just a few of the comments I just read on the first page of the petition. Again, phone numbers to apply your pressure or opinions. Provost Michael Bernstein, phone number 631-632-7000. Obviously not his home number, his office number. Leave a message, leave a voicemail, be polite, be nice, but be, you know, convincing in your opinions.
Emphatic.
Dean of CAS, Sasha Kopp, phone number 631-632-6999, one number less than the other one. And hopefully this place continues to be the magic it always has been. And really, it always has been.
Instead of a vocational school.
Yeah. Well, okay, in the real world, of course, all hell's breaking loose, as always. Trump is still president. He's overseas now. It's been interesting. He went to Saudi Arabia, kind of weird there, going to a country that that basically practices
weird.
All kinds of discrimination and prejudice against women and things like that.
No. You got to look at the subtext. Boeing had like 6 different contracts
it's
they got out of that.
Business, I know, yeah. All business, but come on, really? This is the first trip you make. Then to Israel, another country that practices all kinds of oppression and discrimination, but whatever. He met with the boss, you know, the Palestinian president, which was a good thing, I think. It was weird watching his watching Abbas give a speech, basically railing against our policy, and kind of being ignored by Trump when he gave his speech. And now Trump is on his way to the Vatican. Now here's the thing: when you know you look upon in a 3-country trip, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Vatican City, which is a country within Italy. You look upon the Vatican as being the most progressive of these countries, the one that's going to tell him what's what. And I hope that Pope Frank says, you know, Trump, you got to stop this. You got to stop being a fool. You have to treat people well. You have to, not be racist, not be prejudiced against religions and things like that.
Not be corrupt.
Yeah, not be corrupt. You're a human being. Act like one. Yeah, something like that. I hope he doesn't mince words.
Yeah. I would actually say I was impressed with his tempered words. I mean,
who?
Trump.
Oh.
I mean, some of the speeches, it's not bad, especially with this terrorist attack and stuff, and he stuck very close to the script. But he really did not just go through the motions, but he really embraced each of these stops, and he's definitely taking his trip seriously. Don't take that as an endorsement, but it's a
like
different
you said,
side.
He's
it's,
sticking to the script. Let him go off the script a little bit, and the real Trump will come back.
Yeah, get him in front of a bunch of Trump supporters, and it'll be right back to that.
And, you know, it's interesting. He gave a press conference. Actually, it was Tillerson, who's also, he was in Saudi Arabia.
Part
he gave
of the
a
delegation.
Press conference, and the American press wasn't allowed.
Was not either. Allowed, yeah.
What's up with that? The Russians come and visit Trump in the White House, and the American press is not allowed, but the Russian press is. Tillerson gives a press conference in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabian press allowed in. Americans, no, thank you. Because the American press asks tough questions.
No, exactly. They know they'll ask the questions that are being asked here about his legitimacy at all. Okay, and that's what they don't want this trip muddied and tarnished with.
Well, speaking of tarnishing, of course, we had the attack yesterday in Manchester, horrible bombing that took place inside a concert venue. And, you know, it's only the, as far as I know, the second instance of a suicide bombing in England, first being on 7/7 back in 2005 when there were four attacks. It's, you know, we were watching the reports come in of this and tragic, terrifying, horrifying. Again, I find myself fearing the reaction almost as much as the incident itself. Right now I'm hearing reports that the military is being dispatched throughout England.
They went from severe to critical.
Yeah, critical meaning an attack is imminent. I'm not sure exactly how they reached that conclusion.
And what's the logic? How does that help you? Does that make you more alert? I think what has been said is that severe had been that way for so long, people were getting complacent or something.
Yeah. It's bound to be a country in panic. Much of that is not necessary, is not needed.
But it's exactly what the perpetrators of this want.
It's what the perpetrators want, and it's also what, dare I say, our ruling parties want as well. Because
yeah.
When you have a fearful public, you can control them all the easier.
You can roll it all out.
And this will play right into the right wing in England and their anti-immigration policy, our anti-immigration policy.
The whole Brexit.
But, of course, you know, the guy that they believe did this was born in Manchester, you know, but his parents are of Libyan background, so take from that what you will. But it'll play into more anti-Muslim hysteria. Before we plunge into that world, though, full-fledged, let's take a little bit of a look at history, okay? And let's look at some of the Christian terrorism that took place in the same country, all right? There was, in 1974, a bus carrying soldiers and families in northern England was bombed by Christians. 12 people killed, 14 hurt. That same year, October, November, There were a wave of bombings in British pubs, killing 28 people, wounding more than 200. Again, Christian terrorism.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. Now, okay, you might know it as the Irish Republican Army, but it's Christian. They weren't Muslims. You know, it's basically Catholics versus Protestants. It's factions of Christianity that are, you know, and, you know, you have the nationalism, you have Northern Ireland, you have Ireland, you have England, you know, all this. But here we have Libya, we have Syria, we have Iran, we have Iraq, we have all kinds of nationalism. We've got Sunni, we've got Shiite. It's no different. It's no, you have fundamentalism of one sort or another. But yeah. you don't talk about this. People don't seem to remember. That was, you know, February and November of the same year, two bombings inside one country where we haven't had a bombing of this nature in England for 12 years by the Muslim terrorists, as they are called. Let's go to 1982. Two Christian, I'm going to say Christian from now on just to piss people off. Two Christian bomb attacks on soldiers in London's Royal Parks kill 11 people, wound 50. December 1983, a Christian bomb at Harrods department store kills 6. Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's cabinet narrowly escapes a Christian bomb that kills 5 people at Brighton Hotel during Conservative Party's annual conference in 1984. 1989, a Christian bomb at Royal Marines Music School in southeast England kills 11, wounds 22. And I think I've made my point. There's a lot of bombings going on, and this country's not immune either. We had FALN, we had Croatian separatists, all sorts of groups throughout the 70s and 80s doing
Oklahoma
things
City.
Like this. Yeah,
not as religious. I think,
well, he wasn't Muslim, was he? He wasn't Jewish. He was, I think, he was Christian.
Non-denominational. I don't know. Was he baptized?
Yeah.
Was he baptized?
And that guy in South Carolina, you know, he was. I don't think he was a Buddhist. You know, who massacred people because of their skin color. Point is, you cannot put ignorance. You cannot put intolerance. You cannot put fear. And terrorist actions on one group or another, because if you do that, you're playing right into the hands of people that want you to hate. And there's no shortage of that. And you're going to see that in days ahead. You're going to see all kinds of fear. And just wait till Trump goes off script. Just wait till the next thing he says about these people. Yeah, today he was calling them losers. That was his big attack on them. Okay, they're going to feel bad hearing that they're losers and not monsters, because apparently they like to be called monsters. Interesting tactic, but we need something a little bit more, I don't know, a little stronger than that, a little more coherent.
I think the way to think about it is that these actions are an end that's available to everybody,
mm-hmm.
right? But when we say that the majority or whatever rhetoric to point it at one group or another, what you're really saying is that the majority that we're looking at, that we're acknowledging, because if we acknowledged all of it, we wouldn't be able to isolate this group and make them the scapegoat or the primary actor. So you have to filter that, because that is the rhetoric that gets you in a dangerous area, because it discounts the fact that anybody can do something crazy like that and violent, okay? It's the real... it takes real maturity and skill to navigate it in peaceful ways.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we are making progress. Like, what's going on down south? The south is different. Despite all the backwards motion that we've been seeing over the past few months, we are also seeing forward motion. And I'm talking about getting rid of those damn monuments, those monuments to hatred. You know, in Germany, you don't have monuments to the Nazi Party, and we should not have monuments to the Confederacy, because that was, despite what people might think, that was not anything but preserving slavery.
But, Emmanuel, we're just proud of our heritage,
yeah.
And we just want to remember our history.
Okay, then, you know, go to Cracker Barrel and remember it there and take pride in that or something, but it's... This is not what you should be proud of at all. And basically what has been happening is that the Confederate monuments have been coming down in places like New Orleans. They're among the city's oldest landmarks. And after decades, standing sentinel over that city, they're now gone. And a controversy that at times harken back to the divisiveness of the Civil War they commemorated, is now receding. The last of the monuments, a statue of General Robert E. Lee facing defiantly north with his arms crossed, was lifted by a crane from its pedestal late Friday, and a cheer came out from the crowd, who recorded the history with their phones and shook hands with each other in congratulations. Many in the crowd had waited since morning. I never thought I would see this day, shouted one person, but look, it's happening.
Can I just say this?
Yeah.
The Confederacy, also losers.
Okay. Well, in many ways, yes. They lost the war, and they also were losers. That's damn true.
And still are.
An American flag will stand where the Davis statue used to be in the area where the Liberty Place monument used to stand or remain as is. Let me read you some comments from our esteemed Newsday readers here on Long Island. When society chooses to ignore history, it always seems to find a way to repeat itself. That from a Tom Haskell. And yeah, I'm reading your names because you're going to post your crap publicly. You'll be acknowledged publicly. So, Tom, when you say that society is choosing to ignore history, no, society is not choosing to ignore history. Society is learning from history.
And not to glorify it.
Exactly. They're not glorifying history. So, you know, by your logic, flying a swastika, you know, over the Reichstag in Germany, that's, yeah, we're not forgetting. We did that. That was us.
This serves as a reminder for all the ages.
Okay, but they don't talk like that in Germany.
Oh, yeah.
They don't just suddenly develop a redneck accent when they're Nazis. But the point is that, yeah, you acknowledge history. You don't, like you said, glorify it.
Yeah.
And having a statue that literally said white supremacy on it,
yeah.
That is not cool. That's not something that we are going to tolerate anymore.
That's
sorry, those days should have been gone a century ago. I'm glad they're gone now. Okay, let's continue on to Jack Blake. A few years ago, I had an employee working for me who came from Mississippi. She was fun to be with, and one day I jokingly said to her, "Too bad you lost the war." She looked me straight in the eye and said, "Who told you the war was over?" Be careful what you do down south. The South will raise again. I can't even get that right, Jack. So the South will rise again is what you're supposed to say. But, yeah, you see, this is the mentality that people think it's going to happen again and they're going to win. And, no, you're not. Losers, go to the back of the auditorium and just sit down. It's done.
But, really, what does she do? Like, what? What is she? She's so fixated on that war and all her little friends thinking that that's still going on.
A lot of angry
in
people.
In their little itty bitty mind.
But what is it that you're standing up for exactly? Oppression, hatred.
And think about how much energy that takes. Like, is she solving any kind of medical disease? Is she helping the downtrodden? What is she doing? No, she's fixating on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's helping us to sort of understand that disease.
But how preoccupied do you have to be?
There are people who are obsessed with this. In
uh-huh.
fact, I grew up with them. For some reason, here on Long Island, Southern Rock became really big. And there were all these people in pickup trucks with Confederate flags driving around.
Southern Rock?
For God's sake, we're in New York. Why are you driving around with a Confederate flag? Why are you even here?
I saw some this last weekend.
Where?
Saw some flags out on whatever, you know, one of these here roads.
Confederate flags?
Yeah, somebody... Like an American flag and a Confederate flag on their truck? Yeah.
Wow.
Like big ones, you know? Yeah.
Well, just give them the finger whenever they go by.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do.
There's a lot of that on Long Island.
I hate to say
that
is a swastika. That's the equivalent of a damn swastika. It is.
Yeah. They're really, I mean, that and Jeep guys, it's crazy out here.
Well, wait, just Jeep guys or Jeep guys with offensive things? I mean, you're not offended.
I'm not going to say it's equivalent, right. But it's a menace.
There are many nice people who drive Jeeps.
I'm sure.
Okay, here's something from Gary Layton. To think I ridiculed the Taliban when they destroyed historical monuments. America has fallen to a new low. We are cleansing our history to make it more politically correct. Truth and facts can be twisted, distorted, and now erased. Well, Gary, from SUNY Oswego, of all places, a SUNY school, you need to study some more, because this is not erasing history at all. This is acknowledging history. This is drawing attention to it more than it has ever been before, because these monuments were just sitting there in the background, and people accepted them without comment. Now we're commenting. Now we're acting. So I don't think we're forgetting history. We are acknowledging it, and we are acting upon it.
The consensus has been made. The results are in, and this is where society is choosing to go.
Jimmy Wilkinson from the Long Island Railroad says this country has fallen apart. Okay. Scott Parker, agreed. It's part of history. As wrong as it was, it's history. You can't make it disappear as if you're hosing off the sidewalk. You know, it's amazing to me how this can be twisted and distorted as erasing history.
Well, that's
why don't we have, like, you know, a monument to the Klan then? Because that's history too. But if you take away the monument, you're erasing history. You only erase it if you take it out of the history books and you don't actually focus on it and know why it's wrong.
I will agree with that analogy. That's apt in that most of the time, if you're spraying off a sidewalk, it's some ugliness.
Think about that.
It's,
okay.
Do you not
spray off your sidewalk when, say, your dog has an accident?
Yeah, the dogs that aren't curbed usually result in a sidewalk getting sprayed.
How is the dog going to learn?
Uh-huh.
If you hose off the sidewalk, you got to leave it all there. You know what? I don't want to visit your sidewalks, Scott. No, I'm sorry. George Lasher says, when will we be removing the Washington Monument and the Jefferson Memorial? We can't be having tributes to slaveholders. Also, didn't Jefferson threaten the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court over the Aaron Burr trial? We should try him posthumously and strike his name from the rolls of the great presidents, which he spells president. Let's revisit all our history and make all the little snowflakes happy and safe.
Okay.
Let me just say, that's all the comments on Newsday. 100% again in favor of racist crap. It's so embarrassing, so distressing. But I know it doesn't reflect what people actually think. It just reflects what those who are forceful online and it, through the media, unfortunately, because they're able to get an even footing with people who actually know history and are educated. It's a distortion. I know people don't feel this way, because if people did feel this way, the monuments would not be torn down. We would not be accepting things like gay marriage and equality and progression. We would be moving backwards. So this is an anomaly. It's something that we need to fight, something we need to challenge at every step. So it's embarrassing to me that our newspaper continues to be open to this kind of crap that is constantly being posted, unanswered, and it's just sad. What do you got there, Kyle? You got a map of the United States that looks kind of ominous.
Yeah, there's a really detailed precinct map. Basically, it describes how the election went, and it was in the news this week. It was somebody at Wazoo, actually, uh-huh. Washington State University, created this map, and so
you have an ad blocker, stop letting you look at it.
I can't look at it.
God, I hate that
paywall.
Wow.
Anyway, the reason I was gonna show it is really because Long Island's really red.
Yeah, well, we are really red.
it's really, really red.
Red-faced with rage, apparently, because
I can't get a good picture to zoom in, but basically there's very tiny spots on Long Island that are blue, but it's not surprising.
This building, actually, is, you can see it, it's blue. We're in a blue building.
yeah. There's little spots, usually along the coast, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, what is it about the seashore that makes people more liberal?
And I think maybe also the connection to Connecticut or something. It's something about this small area near the university that is blue, and pretty much everywhere else it's red.
Wow.
There's other spots. NASA has a fairly large blue spot.
Let me just give out the phone number, because we are taking phone calls now. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I might have to figure out how to pick up the phone, but I'll do that. I commit to doing that. But Kyle, I want to also talk about a different story. Did you know that there is housing discrimination on Long Island out in Yapank? The German-American Settlement League apparently has this land out there, and they've owned this land since the 1930s. All right, supporters of Hitler. they're not still supporters of Hitler, but they date back to that. They've agreed not to discriminate against people because of race or national origin, and they've agreed to replace the current president and treasurer by June 2nd. And the new officers can't be relatives of the current president. Now, the nonprofit league owns the land where 50 private homes now sit, and league covenants had restricted how those homes could be advertised for sale. The league had historically made it difficult for non-white, non-Germans to join under its policies. The league will also have to report regularly to the Attorney General's office to demonstrate it is complying with the agreement. Newsday reported last year that a Yapang couple settled a 2015 federal lawsuit claiming the league's discriminatory covenants prevented them from selling their home. The league agreed to pay them a total of $175,000 for damages and attorney's fees. Their bylaws required the couple to advertise the house through printed materials circulated only to league members. Now, this Yaphank community, it might be interesting to go out to. It was founded as a summer camp during the 1930s by adherents of Adolf Hitler to support the German Nazi Party several years before the outbreak of World War II. And some of the streets in the community, also known as Siegfried Park, were named for Hitler and other German leaders. Now, they changed those street names after the war, but I understand it's an interesting place to visit and check out.
Yeah, pass.
All right. We're going to try and pick up the phone here. I think we have... I got
to
hit this.
Someone with something to say.
If I hang up on you, caller, it's my fault, but there might be somebody here. Is there a caller there?
Say something.
Yes, there is a caller.
Oh, good. Wow, we made it work. Where are you calling from?
I'm from Long Island. I've been active in the community for about 4 decades, sort of retired in the past decade.
4 decades? Wow, okay.
The last decade, I've more been moving away from it, but...
May I ask what part of the island you're from?
Nassau and Western Suffolk. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good part. Can I ask you to turn down your radio just a little bit, though, because you're
feeding
through.
Oh, yeah. Let me move to another room.
You could do that,
too. Sorry about that.
No problem. What's on your mind?
Basically, our history is not told where it really is substantial, meaning that our best origins are not known because they're not even celebrated. You know, you have the Enlightenment has gave us a lot of the facets of the maybe the U.S. Constitution, but a major portion of it was from the several tribes of the Algonquin, which were matriarchal.
Yes.
And I think these pieces were much more, well, they're inseparable from our greatness. If the United States Constitution is our greatness, it should at least be acknowledged. And it was never acknowledged simply because some of these bands of Algonquin signed a peace treaty with the English regent. And they were, you know... The treaties like that were for life.
Uh-huh.
And they were in the way of our Western expansion. And there was literally the Bluecoats under George Washington brought in the artillery. And they probably laid out the artillery about 10 miles east of the Seneca Lake. And flaming steel eradicated a beautiful encampment of women and children. And destroyed their crops and everything.
Yeah, well, there's so much dark history that we don't acknowledge, that we don't focus on. You know, on Long Island, for instance, how many communities are named after native people who have been completely wiped off the face of the earth? Setauket, for instance, right next to Stony Brook. There's a whole history of the native culture there. And there should be monuments. That's where monuments should be.
To some extent, there's a lot of intermarriage, but that may have been decades later. You know what I mean? There's a point where that becomes almost an individual-to-individual basis. It's not like open arms that the society welcomed these folks at any point in time. They became homogenous.
Think about also the rhetoric that at the time was said about Native American people. I mean, how were they characterized?
Yeah, just look at a movies from the 1950s. You'll see.
Yeah,
I'm sure it
yeah.
wasn't much better then. So the people themselves, you know, like you said, it would be person to person because the overarching consensus would be whatever the rhetoric of the Bluecoats or whomever was trying to take over at the time.
Let me ask you: do you think we're moving forward or backwards in history?
Yeah, I think we need a shake up because we are so so profoundly sort of strangled in terms of forward motion. We are moving. We happen to be leading in both wind power and in photovoltaic, but it's like so overdue. And those are only two of about 8. Sustainable solar powers that are not being utilized.
When you say we're leading, you mean Long Island?
No, the United States has
superseded
China, People's Republic of China, which used to be leading in wind power and photovoltaic.
The United States is leading in wind power? Really? I didn't know that. That's amazing.
There's a lot.
When we go to Germany and Denmark, we see wind turbines everywhere, and here it seems like a struggle even to get one constructed, but that's good to hear.
I don't see why we should build these expensive ones in the ocean when you got these ugly strip malls all over the place. Why don't I just put the smaller ones on top of them?
That is a great idea.
It'll be a nice decoration.
For every closed store in a strip mall, put a wind turbine instead. That is the best idea I've heard all day.
Monuments to green power.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, fill up empty storefronts with batteries and inverters and then throw that.
You know, encourage stores to go out of business because that way they'll put a wind turbine up instead and make money off of it maybe.
No, it is the modern wind monument, no matter how big it is quiet, no vibration,
uh-huh.
And it is very efficient. It uses some pretty serious metallurgy, but and nuclear power is a theft of our best metallurgy.
It's incredible to me, you know, communities like Shoreham out east that had a nuclear power plant that we were fortunately able to stop. They had no problem with that because it reduced their school taxes. But now, you know, a solar farm is being built, and oh my God, it's ugly and it's taking away our land. And it's, you know, it's completely renewable and clean, and they're objecting to that, or they're objecting to wind turbines as a blight on their scenery. But, you know, having a nuclear power plant that could have an accident like in Japan and make the place uninhabitable for centuries, yeah, that's something we need to do. It's disgusting.
Well, I understand that much of that land is actually natural old growth forest.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I understand the state is moving to make it a container port, so and that would only affect the shorefront,
right,
which is already affected negatively anyway.
There are good arguments for not putting a solar farm in a forest. Yes, I agree with that. But there are people who are just opposed to solar in general or wind turbines in general, and I just cannot believe that they would accept nuclear and not accept something clean. That's just
well. Even Calverton has a lot of concrete. That's where you could put a solar farm.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, whatever.
Hey, thanks so much for your call, though. It's been very enlightening.
All right, thank you. I want to get back to your program.
All right, keep listening. Take care.
Bye bye.
Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. If there are any other people out there that have opinions, but Kyle, you had an interesting story, I think, from down south. Some more enlightenment. What do you got?
Yeah. Well, I do want to thank the caller. I'm glad he raised the point of metallurgy because, you know, when you have scarce resources, what you put those towards has an impact because the costs go up with scarcity, and then when you want to do something that is renewable and there's no materials that are affordable, it raises the cost for that industry. And if you're just adding rare metals and high-quality steels and stainless steels to add more loops for toxic stuff and pumps and all this incredible engineering that is essentially a big poisonous waste producer, It's insane because it takes away from how those metals could be used.
We'll have to get to your story in a moment because we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi. Do I have the studio?
Yes, you're on the air right now.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, thank you.
Shocking, isn't
it? Thank you for your program.
Thank you for your listenership.
You're welcome. Many years of good public information.
Can I ask where you're calling from?
I actually live in Holbrook, but
okay.
I'm calling from pulled over to the side of the road to comment and, put a couple of thoughts out there.
That is a smart and responsible thing to do. Don't talk while you're driving. Thank you for that.
Or drive with your knee.
So let me know if I'm taking up too much time. But in reference to the notion of creating haters by slanting information and referring to the, let's suppose a group of Christians went out and just got kind of crazy and ridiculous and radical. In other words, reiterating your point from before,
mm-hmm.
about people allowing the media to lean them into referring to the offenders as this group or that group.
Christians, right, right.
Or Muslims,
yeah, yeah.
Or, right. And with that thought in mind, and I agree with what you're saying 100%, and that's something that has really bugged me for a long time, And with that thought in mind, if I had any power, or if we have any power, I would urge the people in government, and especially the people in media, to come up, this is not really a good way to approach the problem by using that terminology, and I think we should come up with a terminology that names it for what it is, and don't give the terrorists the dignity of having the word Islam in the title that we choose for them.
Exactly.
You know?
Thank you. And, you know, just like we did not refer to the IRA bombers as Christians because what they did not represent values of Christianity. We should not refer to any current terrorists as Muslim because they certainly do not represent the values of Islam. That's just
amen, amen. And on that same note, I would ask the media and the governments to participate in renaming this thing for what it is in its current day. For lack of a better off-the-cuff example, I would say, refer to them as Satan's Garbage or Association or something like that because, you know, when Salman Rushdie wrote about satanic verses,
yes.
I mean, then they put a price on his head.
Right.
And I just think that we should be bringing out a title and an acronym that calls them for the cowards they are. Perhaps it should even be called Satan's Cowards.
Yes, and I think exactly to your point, it puts that group on a pedestal. It elevates them as the group.
Right.
As they are the premier of this tactic and almost encourages them.
It is what they want. And, you know, in a way, I almost agree with Trump saying they're losers because if we applied that across the board, it might actually have some effect.
Yeah, a lot of people said that landed pretty well, actually.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
who would have guessed?
Because to your whole point about these people manipulating the mindsets of the general public, and even if they did it by accident, by identifying them as any Christian or any Muslim or any Buddhist association, where given, we have negative feelings towards those faith systems, which for most of history has not been a faith system that was offensive to society's desire to be, straight and forward. So we are impeding a faith system that has lasted for centuries without being associated with such horrible things. And then again, of course, there are groups that are regularly associated with extremist leanings. But certainly to besmirch the good Muslim people and the good Muslim name and the wonderful faith of Islam, that name is forever tarnished because,
right.
And like you said, the extremist, violent cowards, the people who put bombs in stadiums where there's children, and the people who destroy people with no due process, they have accomplished their goal.
Yeah, and with our help. Listen, we're going to have to leave it there, but thanks so much for those words. They mean
a
lot.
Thank you for what you do, and thanks for taking my call.
Take care. All right, Kyle, we're almost out of time, so you only have a minute to talk about this kind of it's not really humorous.
It's insane. It's okay,
insane.
Of course, from Florida. Okay, the headline, Tampa man arrested for allegedly killing neo-Nazi roommates who disrespected his Muslim faith.
Neo-Nazi roommate. We've all been there.
Okay.
We've all had neo-Nazi roommates.
Right.
It's a real drag.
He was in a smoke shop holding three people at gunpoint, and the police
arrived. I'm sorry. Why was he holding people at gunpoint? Just because he was doing that?
I think he was going to arrest them, but at that
rob them. Okay.
And so when he was arrested, he had informed the victims in the smoke shop that he had already killed somebody. He further informed them that he was upset at America bombing his Muslim countries. Now, here's the kicker. And can you just imagine these roommates? These guys are 18, 22, and I think another 18-year-old. Anyway, so the police then sort of ask him, based on the accounts from the store, Arthur's directed... this guy's name's Arthur's. Devin Arthurs, directed them to his apartment where two male victims were found dead. He identified the victims to police as his roommates, Jeremy, 22, and Andrew, 18, and provided details of the shooting, including the rifle he used, the sequence of events, the exact location of the shooting, and the placement of the shot on each victim. Arthurs stated that he had once shared a common neo-Nazi belief with his two roommates.
And he had a philosophical difference with them? And
before converting to Islam.
He converted to Islam?
Yeah.
A neo-Nazi converted to Islam.
I don't want to bring race into this, but he's like this typical white boy, right? So, okay, not that that has anything to do with it, but it's just kind of interesting to think about it. So then he converts to Islam. It's like, you know, you drank out of my milk in the fridge. And that the shooting deaths were caused by the individuals disrespecting his Muslim faith.
Okay, you know, and I'm sure the media is going to jump on that as another example of Islamic terrorism, but man, in this country, it's just white people problems and neo-Nazis that can't seem to agree on just how hateful they are. All right, well, that's going to have to do it for us here tonight. One final bit of sad news, Kyle. We lost somebody today?
Yeah, we did. Roger Moore. Also known as James Bond.
James Bond. Well, let's go out with the James Bond theme then, as we wait for Finn and Finn's revolution.
He was my favorite Bond.
Write to us.
All of these movies were great.
Write to us. Oh, yeah, there are a bunch of Bonds, but he was one of the best. OTW@2600.com is our email address.
Except for the sexism. I mean, I'm not going to apologize.
You know, 1960s, 70s, yeah. What do you expect? All right. OTW@2600.com. We'll see you next week for another edition of Off the Wall. Rest in peace, Roger Moore. Good night.